This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Information can be found at kboo.fm/dreams2013.
Put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Now they took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged all the people $1.50 just to see them. I said, don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away that DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, believe me, the birds and the bees. Don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard that screen door slam. And a big yellow taxi come and took away my old man. Till it's gone, they paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard that screen door slam, and a big yellow tractor come and took away my house. It took away my land. I said, don't it always seem to go? You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise,
put up a parking lot.
Good morning. The time is 8:04 and you're listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Sarah Sneath, your host this morning, and I'm here with Eric Rosewall, the program director of the local nonprofit DPAVE, Ted Labby, a DPAVE board member and one of the original crew members for the organization, and Joseph Perkey, the lead designer of DPAVE's James John Project in St. John's, is joining us telephonically. For those listeners not familiar with the organization, Eric, can you tell us what is DPAVE?
Sure. Yeah, DPAVE is a small nonprofit. And we work with community groups here in Portland to transform overpaved spaces into community green plate group spaces.
When and how did it get started?
DPAVE began formally about 5 years ago with its first project, Fargo Garden, on Fargo and Williams. And really started many years before that in the backyards of some other original DPAVers who had some pavement in their backyard and decided they wanted to remove it and create a green space. And so that those actions began in the early 2000s and kind of morphed into bigger and larger projects beginning in 2008. And almost 5 years later now, we've the organization is a full nonprofit, and we do many projects a year, working with schools and churches and other private landowners to transform their spaces.
So, Ted, you can answer this too. How do you decide, how do you find the projects, I guess? Do people come to you, or do you seek out the spaces?
Yeah. We have a lot of people come to us with ideas for projects, and we have a really talented crew of volunteers that kind of screen the projects and decide on They look at each project and evaluate them in terms of their benefit to the community, their benefit to the environment, the urban environment, and whether there's, you know, a group there that can offer long-term stewardship for the site, that it's not just like a one-time thing that we're doing and it'll become neglected afterwards. But we've been really surprised how many people there are with places like this that are neglected, that they want to transform into new green spaces. And I think when we did the first project, Eric mentioned, the Fargo Forest Gardens, you know, at the time we were thinking this was just going to be a one-time deal. We had this large conference happening. The World Car-Free Cities Conference happened in Portland in 2008. And we thought, what an amazing opportunity. People are coming to Portland from all over the world to talk about how we transform our cities, how we make them more resilient, to work on this 2,500 square foot parking lot, turn into a garden. And then after that, we kept having people come to us. So it kind of evolved into, you know, an organization at that point.
Cool. So can you tell me a little bit about, unfortunately, we haven't been able to reach Joseph yet. So can you tell me a little bit about the project that he was involved with, or he is involved with, the James John Project?
Sure. This is a really exciting one we did. We've done two phases, starting in 2011 at James John Elementary School in St. John's. We partnered with AC Portland, the Timbers Army, and Adidas, who helped to install a turf soccer field, a mini little field in this huge expanse of paved playground. And we implemented some regreening efforts around their soccer field. So that was a really, really cool component that gets a lot of use by the community to get in there, a fun partnership. And then this past summer, we've did an additional 4,000 square feet of depaving to improve landscaped areas and do an enormous bioswale that catches much of the stormwater that falls on the site and would otherwise be running off into the storm drains.
Yeah, and Ted, you were talking about that earlier too. That is part of the DPave initiative or mission, is to avert that stormwater. So how does asphalt cause runoff?
Yeah. Well, you can imagine, you know, the Northwest, where we have abundant rainfall. You know, historically, we didn't have as much pavement as we do today. And rainfall here comes slowly, generally, and it has time to soak into the ground and recharge groundwater, which then goes down and feeds our streams and wetlands. And when you put pavement down, it stops that whole process, and water runs off directly to storm drains and feeds directly into our creeks and our wetlands and causes contamination. It also causes physical changes in the stream channel. It destabilizes stream channels. And not surprisingly, that's bad for fish and wildlife that we care about. It's bad for water quality. You know, we have a situation in the Columbia and Willamette right now where there are health advisories for eating fish, depending on where you are and what you're eating. So that's part of what drives us, what our inspiration is that, you know, that's wrong. And pavement isn't all bad. We all use it. And it's about where we have it and doing it more smartly than we have in the past. So we have a lot of derelict pavement that's really not doing anything at this point. Car ownership is, you know, vehicle miles traveled is declining now. We have a lot of underutilized parking spaces in the city, and why not, given the problems with stormwater and other environmental challenges like the urban heat island effect, where we have, you know, excessively high summer air temperatures and we have health impacts from that, why not try to regreen some of these spaces and create green space within the city so that we don't have to, like, run to the wilderness to kind of recharge our batteries, if you will.
So they're in these green spaces. These are like gardens that the communities can interact with then?
Yeah. That's part of our criteria, is that we want these spaces going into the future to be places where the public can interact, that they're open to the public. They may not be, you know, like a a public park, but like Fargo Garden is semi-public. It's open during the hours that the cafe is open. So anybody can go in there, even if they're not a customer of the Waypost Cafe there. And we do a lot of projects at schools and churches, and many of the churches on Outer East Side of Portland function like community centers. So that's really something we feel strongly about, that you know, if we're going to donate volunteer time and resources and public money to this, so that it should be something that is there for the community and every member of the community into the future.
Perfect. So just to remind listeners, you're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland. I'm Sarah, your host this morning, and I'm here with representatives of DPAVE, a local nonprofit that turns unnecessary pavement into community green spaces. If you'd like to add to the conversation, you can call in at 503-231-8187. So you mentioned that the communities interact, I guess, post-green space. How do the communities interact in the initiative in the first place in changing the pavement into a project of whatever sort? How much say do they have, and do you hold meetings, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's actually the fun part. Our projects are long-term. They usually can take up to a year to plan and fully implement. So we begin in the fall selecting sites from those that we've found and that have come to us. And we go through the process all winter and spring of planning, building a partnership with the groups that are involved, and planning out, depicting the vision, getting a site plan and getting everyone's input down. So we have a common vision to go towards, and then we do grant raising and other planning during the winter time. So most of our projects do have a lot of community input and are joint efforts in that way. And then in the summer, we get to actually get everyone in the neighborhood and who's part of that community to get even more invested in the project by we giving them pry bars, and we all go out there and rip it up ourselves by hand.
So is it always by hand?
It's not always by hand. It usually is by hand. We do projects that are between 1,000 and 6,000 square feet, typically, most of our projects. So they are accomplishable in one Saturday with a volunteer party to do it all by hand. And it's a lot of fun. They're kind of like ants swarming on an insect. You can't get them to stop. They love it.
And this is people of all ages from the community and whatnot, too. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had very elderly folks come and help us, and we usually always have kids, and we'll find safe areas for them to work and contribute to the effort. So, yeah, it's the whole swath of the community.
Oh, yes. We're
always surprised that people show up for our events. Because it doesn't sound like fun, but it actually really is. And you know, the reason why we do it this way is there's kind of twofold reason. One is we invest people in the community, whether they're associated with the church where we're doing it, or the school, or their neighbors, in creating the space, and it helps build the long-term stewardship for the site, and people feel really empowered, like they're invested in that space because they helped create it. And the second reason why we do it is that once they're inspired, we want them to go home and look at their backyards. And we want them to evaluate every square inch of pavement that they have and think about, you know, is that something I really need? Because, you know, pavement has negative environmental and community impacts on us all off your property. So we want people to kind of think about that. And we try to show them that it's not permanent. You know, pavement isn't permanent. That's kind of the biggest reason why we exist, is to kind of bust through or break up that sort of psychological notion, because it does actually come up pretty easily. And that being said, you know, if someone doesn't want to be involved in the physical rigors of pulling it up, we have lots of ways to be involved. And we have one of our longest running volunteers, I don't think has ever picked up a pry bar, and she's now in Montana, but she continues to work took her there, and So we have lots of ways to get involved if people are interested.
Very awesome. And we have Joseph Perkey on the line now. And Joseph contributed to the James John Project. He was a designer there. But Joseph is also a community member in the St. John's community where that project occurred. And he has children at the school, which makes me wonder, what did this project mean to you, Joseph?
Yeah, it had a whole host of reasons for getting involved in this. It was really something that was a catalyst for the whole school and the image of the school. But it was a really inspiring piece to get to be a part of with DePave, and it's continued to be a kind of a rallying point for the school and for the community, really. It's the spaces used during school, and then when school is out, it's pretty consistently being used by community members.
So can you specifically say what it was before and how maybe the community interacted with it before the DePave project came in?
Yeah, it was, before we started, it was just pretty much a full city block of asphalt. And it was the third through fifth grade playground. And there was painting on the asphalt for different playground games, but that was about that, and there's a small play structure, but that was about all the differentiation there was on the site. And so there's a lot of, as you imagine, a lot of milling around during recess instead of actually running and playing like kids should be. It's just very uninspiring. And so the work that we were able to do with DePave really has completely transformed the site to being a very active playground now. And if kids want to sit or mill around, there's better areas for that because they can actually have some safe privacy while still being under the eyes of the teachers. But there's a lot more visual and actual physical variation to the playground.
Awesome. And I wondered, since you're from that community and you're involved in that project, does someone from the community in which the pavement is being removed typically design the DePave projects, or is that special to Joseph's case?
Joseph is one of the more unique cases. We really couldn't have done the project without him. He did all the design work, and he helped connect us to the community there, which is critical for our engagement aspect. And you know, he helped us get the project through permitting processes and with a whole slew of other elements. So we really owe a lot to Joseph to helping us get that project done. There usually is each project is different. We usually do have someone who wants to help with design and at least a couple folks from each community that are really driving the project forward, who have brought it to us. But Joseph is kind of one of our rock star site hosts.
Awesome. And that leads me, before the show started, we were talking a little bit about Eric and Ted, your desires to join this initiative and kind of your own niches. Can you explain like the kind of people who join DePave and help out with DePave?
Yeah. I think we have a lot of volunteers that have come to our past events and kind of been inspired and want to know how we pull off our events, because they tend to be very highly orchestrated events. We are when we did our first event, we just kind of had to figure it out on the fly. But there was a lot of planning, and there still is a lot of planning that goes into running the organization. And we've kind of evolved over the years from, you know, just being active in the summer season when we do our events to now we're, you know, active over the whole year. And we're doing fundraising to fund our events because a lot of our work happens in lower income neighborhoods, in high poverty areas, because that's one of our criteria. We believe it's very important that we do this work in neighborhoods that need it. And no surprises, Portland, but a lot of the neighborhoods where we have people of color and higher rates of poverty have lower access to green space. So we view ourselves as part of that solution. So there's a little bit of a social justice element to DPAVE, and we have people interested in that. We have people interested in, you know, ecology of the city and helping regreen the city. And we have people that are just really, I think, supercharged by our events, that just love the energy and come for that. And then I think maybe a fourth category would be people from the communities where we work. So we, you know, when we do an event, we try to reach out to all the neighbors. And it's surprising when you see a schoolyard, how many people, you know, within 5 or 6 or 10 blocks from there come and use that space, even though they maybe don't have children in the school. And I'm probably forgetting a few more categories. Eric thinks of any.
A lot of students.
A lot of students,
young,
yeah.
Young folks are excited by our work.
Awesome. So I know during the James John project, you said that, I guess it's the second phase, you removed 4,000 square feet of pavement. Mm-hmm. Do you know about how much asphalt DPAVE has removed since its beginning? You said it was about 5 years ago.
By hand, a little over 100,000 square feet. And there have been other projects that contributed to an even larger number that were done by machines.
Very awesome. And how many projects is that?
27, I believe.
So about how many projects do you do in a year?
We do 4 to 7 projects typically a year, ranging from a simple small bioswale, 500 square feet or less, up to 5 to 8,000 square feet. Our largest project has been a 15,000 square foot community garden, Vestal Community Garden, out on 82nd and Gleason.
And we're kind of full service in that, you know, sometimes people come to us and, like James John, you know, Joseph did a fantastic job with the design there, and we kind of supplemented the resources that they had, and we brought some grant money to the table to help make it happen. And there's other projects where, you know, we do more than that, at what we did at James John, and there's some that we do less than that. So we also have tools that occasionally people who want to do their own driveway will loan out to people for, you know, a period of time when we're not doing some of our own projects. So really we exist to kind of lower the bar for people and make it easier to transform their landscapes.
And Joseph, so you came to DPAVE with this idea, it sounds like. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired it?
It was actually another parent at the school that initiated the process, and Portland BES, Bureau of Environmental Services, helped get it started with the first draft of a plan, and very soon after, myself and DPAVE heard about it and started getting involved, it was the school hadn't really had much activity in the way of improvements for a while, so everybody was pretty keen to make something happen. So they went accelerated pretty quickly from there.
Awesome. I'm going to remind our listeners again, you're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland. I'm Sarah, your host this morning, and I'm here with representatives of DePave, a local nonprofit that turns unnecessary pavement into community green spaces. If you'd like to add to the conversation, you can call in at 503-231-8187. Okay. Just checking our Facebook real quick to see if we have any comments there. And it looks like we do. So John Asserby says that as a member of the Timbers Army contingency, I have to say that that was a truly worthwhile endeavor. I believe the Timbers Army contingency was involved with this project that Joseph was involved with. He says it was hot. Hard work, but so satisfying to see the mounds of soil ready for planting, where nothing but a stark slab of asphalt lay on a couple weekends prior. One weekend, visiting opposing team supporters joined the work crew. As a result, the play area now looks more like a park rather than a prison yard. Again, that was John Asserby on our Facebook page, and you can also comment there. We're Positively Revolting on Facebook. Is there any areas that we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah, I think one thing we you know, we're really kind of in the mix of running this organization, and we often forget you know, the context that DePave, you know, started in Portland kind of for a reason. And Portland is definitely a leader in sustainable stormwater management, and you know, we as an organization, I don't think could continue to function or do good work without the support of the City of Portland Bureau of Environmental Services. They give us funding for our projects, specifically the Community Watershed Stewardship Program. You know, Jennifer Devlin there has done a lot to help us as an organization along the way. As well, we have a lot of leadership in the soil and water conservation districts, both the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District and the West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District. And then the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality has funded us. We did have some Environmental Protection Agency, EPA money, that helped us with the James John Project. But, you know, all of that, I think, people from afar, last year I went back to Ontario to talk about this work, and they said, why there? And I don't know why Portland became such a leader. Well, I do know, actually. You know, we often talk about the city government and the funding, but it's also people like community heroes, like people like Nina Bell, who actually pushed the city to investigate and try out more progressive stormwater management. So without people like that, citizens, Portland wouldn't have become the leader that it is. And then, you know, we probably wouldn't have the funding that we get to do this work, because it does take, you know, it does take public funding to do this work.
Joseph or Eric, mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that? No? Do you know if this kind of organization exists elsewhere? You said that Portland is kind of a leader in this idea. Have you had other cities or contact you wanting to start a similar idea, or do you know of other organizations like this elsewhere?
We get a lot of interest from around the country. Specifically, I've seen a group in Somerville, Massachusetts start up and do some deep paving. We've seen various other acts of pavement removal here and there. We haven't seen any other groups quite like ourselves form. We did this past year partnered with a group in Ontario to train them on how to do this the whole nuts and bolts process, and they have gathered together a group of other nonprofits around the province, and their mission is to do what we do there. And we get a lot of interest from all around, and we're hoping to do some similar training work and partnership up in the Puget Sound area this year.
Awesome. And I was kind of thinking, too, you said earlier that one of your initiatives is to let people know that pavement isn't permanent. And, you know, every time I type in depave, especially as a verb, you know, into my computer, it's still getting the red squiggly line, you know, because depave is not a verb that we use. And yet you gentlemen are using it pretty regularly. How does it make you feel that there is this amount of unnecessary pavement, or there is kind of this idea that pavement is permanent?
Well, how does it make me feel? I think it makes me kind of, it inspires me to, you know, to talk to people about it, because it's actually very impermanent. You know, we're struggling right now. Local governments are to maintain our public infrastructure with dwindling tax dollars, and you're going to see a lot of talk in the coming years over preservation of our existing infrastructure and of roads and whatnot. And I think that, you know, we're finally getting to the stage on where we're going to start talking about how we can, you know, more intelligently manage our public infrastructure and maybe do more with less. And, you know, I think that people, you know, we're talking in the city government about budget cuts. And we need to do some talking about, you know, all of this pavement that we've put down and how we're going to maintain it. And if it's not working for us, then maybe it's time to pull some of it up. And, you know, Portland itself is, we make pretty good use of our pavement, but there are cities on the fringes that, you know, have gone through a major building boom in the last 20, 30, 40 years. And, people have spread way out, and it's not clear whether that type of lifestyle will be sustainable into the future.
Yeah, if I could add, the seems like the our culture has kind of gone through this paved paradise, put up a parking lot kind of phase, and now, especially in Portland, I think Portland is one of the areas that's leading the charge of the depave paradise, tear out a parking lot. We can really bring our urban areas back to having some of that natural beauty that they had to begin with. There's a lot of unnecessary paving because it's just easier and quicker, and it's clean to have entire parking lot paved over. But if you tear out everything that isn't needed and put that green space, it's you know, it has so many positive repercussions for the environment and watershed, and even just people's mood when they're in the spaces. So I think that depave is doing a great service to really shift our focus of urban areas.
There's also one thing we haven't talked about, Sarah, is the air quality impacts of too much pavement. People think, oh, pavement, there's just more driving, but there's ground level ozone, which is created during the summertime during very hot temperatures, and due to the fact that we have a lot of impervious surfaces like pavement, and that has direct consequences on health outcomes. And that's why we see high rates of childhood asthma in a lot of these urban areas. And the higher poverty neighborhoods have more pavement, and therefore partly higher rates, higher incidence of asthma and other you know, lung disorders like that. So there are health impacts, and it just kind of fragments our neighborhoods, and people don't feel safe, you know, in some places because they're just kind of lonely, desolate landscapes.
Um, So I just wanted to remind everyone that, again, you're listening to Positively Revolting on KBOO Portland. I'm Sarah, your host this morning, and I'm here with representatives of DPAVE, a local nonprofit. If you'd like to add to the conversation, you can call in at 503-231-8181. So 8187, excuse me. And also coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, APA Compass recognizes International Women's Day this month by featuring three interviews on women's issues. We'll hear about women's rights in India, women and violence, and the documentary film Finding Face about the rise and decline of acid violence against Cambodian women. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints remembers the 9th anniversary of the overthrow of the constitutional government in Haiti. At 11, on It Takes a Village, host Shahid Hamid speaks with Jessica Katz, coordinator of the Coffee Creek Family Preservation Project, about incarcerated women and the families they leave behind. And at 11:30, host Eric Yankee interviews Portland artist Roger Pete about his recent trip to the Republic of Congo, where he volunteered with a group of scientists working to set up a new national park. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support to community radio. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. And it looks like we have a caller. Harvey, you're on the air.
Well, I think you're absolutely doing the right thing. It's actually the number of roads around that has reduced us from, you know, we used to be a more of a small village kind of structure, and now because of all the roads and everything, we have our giant mega stores and everything, and it's kind of destroyed the small community. And also I completely agree that every inch we pave over is less of nature turning carbon dioxide into oxygen, so we're really paving over our lungs while we pave over the earth. And I believe that the amount of paved area in the United States is almost equal to the amount of farm area. So that's a lot of area that we could look at as potential farmland if we restructure our transportation system. I've even seen things like they have little things called parklets now where they take a parking space in front of a popular store or restaurant, and they put down synthetic grass and some tables and chairs. We're trying to take back from the car industry, from that whole era that we've been through a lot of it is unnecessary transportation because we live so far from each other. So it's almost like creating more business for the car industry. You know, originally they tore up a lot of the infrastructure for railroads and trolley systems, and so that we'd have to buy cars. And the more cars we need, the more parking spaces. I almost think of the highways as parking spaces because during rush hours, they're all parked out there. It's a terrible thing we've done, and I think we have to refigure it with national transport, public transportation systems that move us rapidly and back into more community orientated types of villages where people can walk around and sit down, go to cafes like in Europe, and all those wonderful things that we really love in life but have been subverted by the car industry and that whole crazy car thing. It's besides that, everybody knows somebody that's been killed or hurt in a car, along with guns. You know, the things that kill the people most in the world are cars and guns. So, I mean, I don't have a car, and I love transportation. I stay healthier because I walk more because I don't have a car. I don't like breathing. I feel so sorry for bikers in bike lanes who have to inhale all the exhaust from cars as they're hyperventilating, running around. We need a whole separate system for bicycles, and perhaps if we can move to that system, we won't need so many cars, roads, and parking lots. So I want to thank you guys for doing what you're doing because you are doing the right thing, especially with global warming the way it is. Parking lots aren't roads and parking lots aren't helping the situation at all. And the more green we have, the more we can sustain our planet Earth. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Harvey, for your comment. Eric and
thanks, Harvey.
Ted, did you have anything to say to that?
Thanks. Yeah. Well, one of the newest things we're doing with Deep Have is we are, you know, we started as a sort of service organization doing these events, and now we're sort of starting to wade into the policy realm. So instead of just focusing on, you know, sites where we can reduce pavement, what are the policies? What are the, you know, what sort of leadership do we have that we can do to turn the boat so that we don't have so much momentum favoring pavement in the first place? So preventing it from getting put down, but also helping shape city and regional policy to reduce pavement over the long term. And so we're just starting this work, but we're getting involved in things like, well, the city of Portland's budget making process we're going to be involved in, going to some of those hearings coming up, and the parking issues that the city is considering right now with apartment buildings that are built without parking. We're involved with that discussion. We're getting involved more at the regional level too. We're going to have some comments together soon for the Clean Water Services is revising their whole standards around design and construction. So we're starting, you know, to talk with other groups like Oregon Walks is a great organization that, you know, tries to promote walking, pedestrian rights. The BTA has done a lot of great work over the years. We're pretty new to this, so we're trying to kind of wade in slowly and learn about it. But we think that, you know, this is sort of something that needs to come into the discussion of public policy, so that we're not just kind of running around at the margins and, you know, depaving certain areas, but we're actually thinking a little bit more intelligently about how we use pavement in the landscape in the future. Because we all need pavement. We all use it, right? It's all about how we do it better.
We have another caller. Randy, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I just wondered, maybe you said before, what happens to the old pavement you rip out, the asphalt?
It gets recycled.
How do you recycle pavement?
We have volunteers. Oh, keep going, I guess.
Sorry, Randy?
Oh, I just wondered. Yeah, go ahead. What do you do with it?
Our volunteers rip it up by hand and load it into drop boxes, and that gets taken to one of a number of facilities locally that grinds it up into gravel, and it's used as sub-base for other roads and other construction projects.
Oh, great.
And actually, if it's really, you know, in good quality, it can be used to pave roads, and because we often need to like reconstitute our roads, and so it gets recycled directly into the product. The harder thing to recycle that we have to often get rid of is the stuff that's underneath the pavement, the underlayment,
the gravel,
which is often too dirty, and we have to, you know, find places where we can put that or reuse it. So it's more expensive actually to dispose of that.
As it happens, our Southwest Church has an unneeded lower parking lot. I think we may be in discussion with you folks. I'm not sure if it's you, but you mentioned grants, I think, earlier. What's the source of grants or funding?
The city of Portland is a good funder. Their Community Watershed Stewardship Program has funded us and funds groups doing naturescaping and all sorts of natural improvements around Portland. And then the West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District and the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation Districts also fund rain gardens and these types of improvements.
Great.
Thank you. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, can I just add one thing? If you're interested in our assistance, we actually have a place on our website where you can submit a site. And we ask that, you know, you don't just go and submit a site that's like down the block from where you live. You have no idea who owns it. But it's really designed for people who are, you know, invested in the site already. But we have a spot on your site where you can, on our website, dpave.org, where you can submit your site, and it'll be a while now before we get to it in the fall, but you know, we can talk about if you guys maybe working with you, and that goes for anybody else that's listening too.
Maybe one more question. So you've taken off the asphalt, you've removed the heavy gravel and underlayment, then you've got this kind of sterile dirt. What happens there? That sounds like the real work begins.
Yeah, it is heavier work. We work with contractors and backhoes to remove the gravel and the soil, and we fluff it up and mix in new compost so that there's going to be infiltration and room for plant roots. But it is pretty heavy work. We try and get volunteers to help us, but much of the time it is heavy machinery kind of work.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, great. Very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. And if you'd like to call in and comment or ask questions like Randy just did, you can call 503-231-8187. And Randy brought up another point about funding, and I understand ePave has a fundraiser coming up. Can you tell us about it?
We do. This is our fourth annual bowling fundraiser. It's basically a party. So we'll be at AMF Pro Lanes on Powell Boulevard a week from tomorrow on March 9th. This is our big annual fundraiser. It's usually a lot of fun, and we've got a lot of great raffle prizes and silent auction prizes donated from businesses all around the city. And this will really help us to fund our projects for this coming season. It, showing up and donating really helps us. It goes a long way toward the expenses that we incur to do these projects and improve neighborhoods.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that, you know, DPave is a very lean, mean organization. We have one employee, and that is Eric sitting across from me. And the rest of us, everybody on the board is a volunteer. People that come to our events, all volunteer. So we don't have a big budget. We do this by the sweat of our brow. And, if people like our work, I would encourage you, to give what you can and either volunteer or give money. And we always need money. We're hoping to grow the organization. We're starting to go beyond Portland and talk about the need for this work. To keep us going, to keep us solvent, we need the support of the community, frankly. So if you like our work, come to the bowling fundraiser and consider a donation.
Thanks. We do have another caller. Colin, you're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Yes.
Hi. My name is Colin Winkler, and I'm in Salem, Oregon. I have a question regarding this organization. So I heard about it before when I was a student at Clackamas Community College, and I wanted to know, do you guys have a website? I may have missed it because I chimed in a little late.
We do, yeah, dpave.org. And
right.
We really exist to be a resource, not only just to help groups actually do this kind of work physically, but to teach them how to do that. And so we do try and provide as much information on how to do it, the whole process. So there, we've got a How to DPave guide on there. You'll find that a lot of people are downloading all around the country and using.
Oh, wonderful. Other question, too. I think I've been to the website, but I haven't been there in a while. Do you guys also work with pavers?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we do. We actually... Eric and a team of folks last summer put together some great videos on how to depave, and it's very focused on kind of the residential scale work. And so check out those videos, and I believe there's something on there was a section on the use of pavers on that.
There's a little bit, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, it sounds like fun.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
We do have another question. I think we might have covered this a little bit earlier on our Facebook, which again is Positively Revolting. And I think DPave also has a Facebook, right? And a Twitter account too.
Correct, yeah.
How could someone find those forms of communication for you guys?
They can get there through our website.
Yep.
Or facebook.com/ DPave, okay. And at DPave.
Perfect. Okay. So on our Positive Revolting site, we have Jim Labby, who says, what do we know or don't know about recovering soils that have been entombed under pavement for long periods of time?
Who is this guy? I never heard of him before in my life. Well, we don't really. Like Eric mentioned, depending on what the use is for the site after we depave it, we often use equipment to kind of decompact the soil because it's, you know, I don't know if people have ever gone by a site under construction. They have machines for actually compacting the ground. And so we often have to do work to, you know, aerate the soil basically and put organic matter into it. But we really don't know that much about it. I mean, it's fascinating because, you know, in a natural soil ecosystem, there's a continual rain of organic matter coming down into the soil. When you pave that over, you cut that off. So a lot of these soils that we find, you know, after we've dug them, after we've uncovered them, are totally devoid of organic matter. And organic matter is what drives the whole soil food web ecosystem. It's based on detritus, plant detritus. But it's amazing to me as a biologist how fast the system recovers. When we bring organic matter back into these sites and we aerate the soil, we often find earthworms. Sometimes we find earthworms around the edges, like waiting. but it's amazing to go to some of our sites that are now 2 years on and see the life that's there. It's fascinating. But really, from a standpoint of you know, a purely science perspective, we really don't know. We need to do a lot of learning about this. So we know a bit more about the whole issue of contamination, and that scares us. But you know, we don't know too much about how the soil ecosystem comes back to life, except that it seems to happen pretty fast.
Awesome. Is there anything that we haven't covered at this time?
Yeah, one little quick thing I mentioned about soil contamination, and we take that pretty seriously. So we have, in case people are wondering, we have a whole procedure where we actually do test the soil for a range of contaminants before we do our work now. And if we find contamination, that really kind of changes the story, and we consider walking away from the site and not depaving it, because when you uncap contaminated soil, it opens up a whole host of problems. So that's one of our screening processes that we put through a site, and we forgot to kind of mention that earlier.
Thank you. And for listeners, again, you're listening to Positive Revolting on KBOO Portland. I'm Sarah, your host this morning, and I'm here with representatives of DPave, a local nonprofit that turns unnecessary pavement into community green spaces. If you haven't been able to hear the whole interview, you can hear it. It'll probably be up in a day or so online at kboo.fm. If you'd like to add to the conversation, there is a short, very short amount of time that you could call in at 503-231-8187. You can also always comment on our Facebook, and there's a whole website for DPave at dpave.org that allows you to interact with these lovely gentlemen. So before we go, I just wanted again to get some more information about that fundraiser. Could you again tell me what time it is and where I could find information if I forget, and because I don't have a pen and paper right now?
Sure. It'll be a 5 to 8 on March 9th, Saturday, March 9th, at AMF Pro Lanes on Southeast Powell. And right on our homepage, dpave.org, there's information on how to sign up and RSVP. We hope to see more people there.
Joseph, did you have anything else to add before we go? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'd just like to encourage everyone who has any kind of curiosity about DPave and their work to get in touch with them and try it out. It really is some inspiring work to be a part of, it can really turn a site around, re-liven what feels like a dead site that has no hope. So it's a definitely worth looking into if there's any curiosity.
Thank you so much, and thanks again for Ted and Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So they paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging night spot. Got till it's gone, the big paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charged all the people an arm and a leg just to see. Till it's gone, the paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 8:59 a.m. Coming up today on Portland, on KBOO, we have APA Compass.
Proud sponsor of the 23rd Cascade Festival of African Films, Africa Through African Lenses. The film festival will take place February 1st through March 2nd, 2013, Thursday through Saturdays each week. The majority of films were made by African directors and celebrate Africa's achievements, expose Africa's failures, and reveal the possibilities of change and a more hopeful future. More information on the Festival of African Films can be found at kbo.fm/CFAF23.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help sponsor Hope on the Slopes, a 24-hour skiing and snowboarding fundraiser to help benefit the American Cancer Society. Hope on the Slopes will start at 1 p.m. on Friday, March 1st, and continue until 1 p.m. on Saturday, March 2nd, at the Mountain Hood Ski Bowl. Hope on the Slopes is a competitive, family-friendly event that combines fun and enjoyment on the slopes with the passion to change the world. You can ski for 6 hours, 18 hours, or try the full 24 hours. Form a team with your friends, families, or coworkers. Again, Hope on the Slopes is 24 hours starting at 1 p.m. on March 1st at Mount Hood Ski Bowl. For more information, go to kboo.fm/hopeontheslopes.
You're listening to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. I'm Kushlani D'Souza, and in recognition of International Women's Day, we're focusing today's program on gendered violence, a difficult but important topic that could be triggering for some listeners who are violent survivors or their advocates. Today, Sarika Mehta talks with former APA Compass Collective member Patty Duncan about her film Finding Face and Acid Violence. I'll be talking with anthropologist Pinky Hota about the media coverage surrounding the highly publicized Delhi rape incident. And first, you'll hear Andrew Ye's interview with Sonia Falero, who also discusses the Delhi case, as well as her latest book, Beautiful Thing, Inside the Secret World of Bombay's Dance Bars.
Thanks for listening to APA Compass today. I'm Andrew Ye, and on today's show we have Sonia Falero, the author of Beautiful Thing, Inside the Secret World of Bombay's Dance Bars. The book has won accolades on Books of the Year lists from The Economist, The Guardian, and The Sunday Times, among others. Sonia herself is the recipient of a CNN Young Journalists Award. We'll speak today with her about her book and about the recent social uprising around women and violence in India. Sonia begins by